kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining, as per the huge, Cole Martin. How are you doing?
I'm alive and kicking. How are you?
I am the same, I guess.
I imagine you might be kicking a little higher than me, given that it's raining and the whole arthritis thing. And by kicking, I mean like poking something with my cane.
I'm fat. I don't kick.
I'm also fat.
People could see my video. I'm wearing a 5X shirt right now, so people know that I'm a fatty fat.
So but you're wearing one of the fantastic SML shirts.
I am. I am wearing one of the brand new The SML Podcast t-shirts, a limited edition of only 27. Nice. How special is that?
Very nice.
Also,
that's
potentially
an odd random number, Joe.
Well, that's how many people were interested. I can't help it.
Couldn't round up to 30.
Yeah, and then just sit on three extra shirts. I have like two shirts here that people backed out on, so I already have extra shirts. I didn't need more of them that I'm stuck paying for, but also potentially wearing a shirt because he got one too. CJ Greenwood, you're back. How are you doing?
Oh, sorry to say I forgot to wear the shirt, but it is here and I did clean it and it looks really good.
I'm happy with how they turned out. I think they're
pretty
good.
They're also very comfortable. Like, they're good shirts. They're quality shirts.
They are. And people are like, why didn't you use, like, this other shitty site? And they're like, they don't have good shirts. And they don't have that size.
Also, it's like, well, yeah. Luckily, I dropped a couple of sizes in the past couple of years. So it's been, it's nice. Only XLs for me now. Only got that one.
Nice. I've got a couple extras on you.
I used to be like, well, I was close though. And it used to be a pain in the ass to go to Walmart and buy a shirt because they like never had any. I know that pain.
Cole, you're going to be getting a shirt soon, right?
I am. Next week when I get paid.
I've got one sitting in an envelope ready to go out with your name on it. Literally with your name on it because it's yours.
Yay.
Unless she packs out too.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't have my SML shirt yet, but I am wearing my ID at Xbox shirt today.
Ooh, well, that's our special. Company. Did you win that?
I did.
Oh, wow. Go figure.
I was surprised she didn't find some way to win the SML shirt so that you didn't have to make her pay for it.
No, I'm cheap. I paid for all this shit out of pocket, so I need my money back.
Yeah, exactly. That's why it sucks that two people backed out.
Yeah. Because I got to eat that cost. Yippee! Luckily, I found someone to buy one of them already, so that is a plus. And then the other one, I've been emailing the guy all week, like, "Hey, your shirt came in. Just send me the PayPal, and I'll get it sent out to you." Because I already have his address. Like, it is addressed. It is sealed up. It is ready to go out, just waiting for his PayPal. And he just went radio silent. Like, not even like, "Hey, man, sorry, things came up. I can't really afford the shirt right now." Just straight up radio silence.
Like, I hate the show now. He changed his mind real quick.
I believe the kids call that ghosting.
They do. You're right. Joe, you just got ghosted.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Does that make you feel sad, Joe?
The question is, are there any respawns in this game?
Wait, was I Nolan North ghosted or was I Peter Dinklage ghosted?
I don't understand that reference.
Destiny.
Destiny.
Ghost. Oh.
How did
look? To her, that joke came from the moon.
You had too much passion and energy when you said that, CJ. That doesn't work.
I know. It was
that joke came from the moon.
You're right. How could I be so stupid? I pulled off too much of a Nolan North there. I needed to be more Dinklage.
I'm trying to find a way to segue into the news. So speaking of stupid things, remember how we talked about 21 games were leaving Game Pass at the end of May?
No, indeed. I don't remember that.
Well, CJ, last week we talked about 21 games are leaving Xbox Game Pass at the end of May. And in the past week, another four were announced as leaving Game Pass at the end of May.
Wow.
Including Lego Batman on Xbox 360, Sam & Max, both of the games on 360, and Mad Max on Xbox One.
Huh.
Which Mad Max has been like one of their featured titles.
Also, why Mad Max when it's like...
That one too.
At this point, anybody that wanted it got it for free with the... What? Wasn't it Games with Gold at some point, or was it not?
I don't remember.
I don't think so.
No. I'm thinking PlayStation Plus. It was PlayStation Plus.
Yeah, that's that. I know it was there. I didn't think it was on.
No, I only owned it because it was on it's been on sale a lot.
Maybe they're removing it from Game Pass because it's a future Games with Gold title.
That's
a
very they did that with Metal Gear.
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah. Or maybe it ties into some other news from the week because Mad Max was made by Avalanche Studios. And their new game was announced in Rage 2.
Oh, so maybe they think they'll build up hype so that people want to buy that game to, like, get excited?
I don't know, but watching the trailer for Rage 2, it looks like Mad Max. So I wouldn't be surprised if heavily, heavily influenid. It's co-developed between id Software and Avalanche Studios, obviously the makers of Mad Max, and they also do the Just Cause games. And it is the first game from that Walmart leak to be confirmed as real, so maybe some of those other Walmart games are going to come true.
Yeah, I mean, Forza Horizon 5 will probably come out in a few years.
Yeah, in like 2 years from now. Because Forza Horizon 4 is this year, Forza 8's next year, and then Horizon 5 is the year after.
Yeah, most likely, unless they decide to pull some shenanigans out of nowhere.
Like throw in a new series, Forza Rally, maybe. Oh God, they would do a rally, wouldn't they?
What?
Well, they might actually. That's a very good possibility if they didn't just include that in another Forza game.
True. Some fun Xbox news. They announced a new controller is going to be coming out called the Xbox Adaptive Controller. Cole, did you want to talk about this one?
I'm pretty excited about this, and I'm pretty excited about it because I myself am a disabled gamer. I'm not so severe that I can't play with a regular controller, but sometimes it's a little difficult for me to grip the controller properly or to reach the buttons. I do have a couple fingers that have kind of gone crooked from my rheumatoid disease. Or my wrist is fucking hurt. Huh? Yeah. Surprise. And it's not just the rheumatoid disease, though, because I also have something I don't talk about very often, which is called Raynaud's phenomenon.
Never heard of that.
It's incredibly rare, but it's common in people with rheumatoid disease. But basically, it's nerves that have problems in your fingertips, and I can lose sensation in my fingertips, or they will, like... If it's cold, you can look at my hands and I'll have white streaks going through my skin.
Oh, wow.
And the rest of my fingers will just be like bright red. So it's problems with the nerves and circulation. And again, that affects when, you know, my Raynaud's is bad. It's difficult for me to play. So a controller like this would mean that even on days when my hands aren't willing to cooperate with my wanting the game, I'd still be able to do it. I could set it up and adjust it or have my husband help me play a game and still get through.
But what is this controller? You haven't mentioned that part yet.
I just didn't mention how it's going to help you. Because I was thinking you'd already mentioned that part, but I cut in, didn't I?
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, you didn't cut in. He said,
do you want to talk about it? And then you're like, yeah, it's going to be great for me. Because what is it?
Brains are hard.
Brain think dumb. So yeah. What is this controller? For people who don't know what this controller is, give us the sales pitch, Cole.
Give the sales pitch. It is basically a very large flat controller with enlarged buttons. Everything is kind of high contrast in it. It's very black and white. It looks a lot like the Lunar White controllers that we saw with the Xbox One S. On the back, it has 19 different ports so that a variety of different devices can be plugged into it, and everything can be customized, controlled, mapped out so that if you want to use a different device that's more comfortable to hold or controls in a different way, you can set up the alternative controller so that it will map the buttons out like that. So if you, for example, can't push forward on the D-pad, say you don't have any fingers or your fingers aren't functional and you can't push forward on the D-pad or an analog stick, you can plug in a foot pedal to the controller and use your foot to propel your character with a, like it was, like you were pressing on the D-pad. In addition to having the options for the different plug-in modules, and everything is plug and play, you just plug it in and go into an app and set it up. In addition to being able to plug in the different things, you have that whole option of creating a profile. So if you need a different setup based on the type of game you're playing, you can program those out into the controller so that if you're playing a shooter versus playing a platformer or a puzzle game or a point and click, you have those different devices that can and profiles without having to go in and customize everything every single time you play. No. Which is kind of how it is now. If you look at using Copilot or going into the options, you can use button mapping on the regular controllers. I've had to do it sometimes when my fingers are really sore or whatever. I'll map the left trigger and right trigger to a face button that I don't use as often or isn't used in a game, for example.
Like the view button. Fuck that button.
Yeah, fuck the view button. Who uses that? But back, isn't it? I still say back and select.
Me too. It's start and select to me. It's always going to be start and select to me. That's yeah. What I grew up with. But the short of it is that this is basically a controller designed for people with handicaps and physical disabilities to game. And the video that they showed off with it was even showing people playing together, like someone with palsy or like the one guy didn't have any fingers on his hand and they were just playing games normally, or they were using the Copilot feature. And it's just a really, really, really cool product for that audience out there who doesn't really get a chance to game normally.
I was actually reading too about one person. They had set up a device so that if they wanted to move forward, they blew across the microphone. And if they wanted to move back, they inhaled. And the wind going backward against it versus outward would affect the way the character moved.
That's what I'm going to do when things start going long on here. I'm just going to blow into the microphone to try and move things forward. So when a review hits its like 17th minute, I'll just be like, Cole.
And then I'll be like, what was that for?
I'm trying to move forward. Never mind. But there's no date on when this thing's coming out. They just said it's coming out later on this year. It is only going to be available through the Microsoft Store. And surprisingly, it's priced at only $99.99, which I thought I was expecting like $200-$300 for what it is and how much stuff comes with it.
Right. Yeah, I was really surprised by the price, especially when you consider that the Elite controller is $150.
Yeah. And there's a lot more stuff there than there is with the Elite.
just the functionality of being able to plug in different devices that are more comfortable is impressive on its own. But the sheer number of disabilities they've tried to cover in this one device just stand out, because they were even they included mounts so that for people who are in wheelchairs, they don't want to try to have to hold the controller on their lap. It can be mounted to your wheelchair arms.
That's really cool.
So it's really impressive how they've just thought out everything to the extreme from, and had actual people with disabilities playtesting this thing and giving feedback on it and saying, yes, this works. No, this doesn't. This is what we need.
So a really cool, unique product like this, obviously the internet is going to be entirely in love and there's going to be zero negative reactions to this, right?
People are shitheads.
Let's see. What do people on Reddit have to say? The first one, is this for real? It seems like a gag to me. It's pointless. They're just doing a more expensive, less convenient and not as good labo like Nintendo has. If it's a gag, I think it's great. If it's for real, pointless and a dick move getting them people involved in something so useless. But if it's a gag, it's funny. Someone else says, can't you guys see they're just using disabled people to flog their shitty hardware? Clearly, someone said that they're trying to corner the disabled market and profit off of disabled people, which I'm thinking they're going to be losing a lot of money on these controllers.
That was actually something that they mentioned in one of the articles about it when they were doing interviews, that they had a hard time getting the backers, the investors at Microsoft on board with this, because even though it fits that model of inclusivity that Microsoft has been trying to promote, the return on investment for something like this is so small that it wasn't going to be worth it in the long run. And so they had to push it in a way that promoted, you know, how it would basically make Microsoft look better versus a different type of return on investment than a financial one, because it is going to cater to a very select market that is not really a large market, but it's still a necessary one.
And again, for the low cost, I really don't see them making any kind of money off of this at all. Let's see.
The research and development alone has been a 6-year process, and you know that's going to take a long time to pay for.
Oh, that's cheap. Super cheap. 6 years of work? Super cheap. Let's see. What does this person here say? I'm contemplating whether or not I should comment this. Does it vibrate? Does it have a separate node for vibrations, like a cylindrical phallic node that vibrates and can be inserted into stuff? Fucking really, people?
Why?
Really? Someone else says the lack of any good exclusives on Xbox plus their lack of sales have really forced their hand in competing through customer services. So that's always fucking fun to do.
How dare you want to make other people who aren't like the core interested in your service?
Or
capable of using it.
There's such shitty people in the world, though. Such shitty people. A good idea, but the concept seems like a garage project any hobbyist could quickly throw together. I expect more from a company with Microsoft's resources. Really?
Any hobbyist could throw it together. That's why we have Able Gamers and Special Effect, and they have to raise millions of dollars for this shit. Yearly.
Yeah.
It's just not a cut and dry thing.
Let's see. Here's one. Poor attempt by Microsoft at getting into the disabled market. Anyone who can't play Xbox should be playing on PC. Fuck you. How about that? Fuck you.
That's the problem. And that is the thing here, too. This also plays with Windows 10. This is not Xbox limited. It plays with both Xbox and Windows 10. Because guess what? If you don't have fingers and you can't play on an Xbox, you can't play on a fucking computer either, guys.
You
can't
use a fucking keyboard without fingers. I mean, you could bash it and hit a bunch of keys at once, but you're not really going to accomplish anything meaningful. And then here's probably one of my favorites. Awesome tech, really happy to see it. Sucks there aren't any games to play, though. How's that Halo E3 extravaganza looking this year, Microsoft? Fuck you. How about that? Fuck you.
I'm a disabled gamer with 600 games on my hard drive. I'm happy.
There are shitty people. Such shitty people in the world. So, since we're talking about shitty things, let's talk about some more shitty stuff. Sony is ending production of physical games for the PlayStation Vita in North America and Europe. A message to developers stated that all product code requests must be submitted by June 28th of this year, and final purchase orders must be entered by February 15th of next year. Sony confirmed to Kotaku that card production is ending, and I can only wonder how this is going to affect companies like Limited Run Games, Signature Games, that do these niche indie titles for Vita that have been keeping the platform alive, basically.
How old is the Vita?
I don't remember. CJ, I heard you type in before. How old's the Vita?
The Vita? It came out in 2012, I believe. So it's like 6 years old. I was actually, I looked at the news about that recently because I saw it on here and I was like, oh, that's sad. I actually wanted to kind of get a Vita now because I have a PlayStation 4 now. So it seemed like it was a cool idea to get both.
Hey, you might as well. There's still plenty of good games for it. They're just not going to have much new shit coming out.
At least physically. Most of the marketplace for that game or for that system was digitally anyway.
Yeah. So. I mean, I'm a noted Sony hater, and I will live and die by my Vita. That thing is an awesome piece of tech. I love it.
Yeah, I wish Xbox had its own version like that, because it'd be nice if there was a handheld Xbox.
Surface Pro.
Well, yeah, but I mean Xbox. It could, you know.
I don't think they want to fight Nintendo in that market. They've been how buddy-buddy with Nintendo lately. I don't think they ever want to go up against the 3DS or even now the Switch, because that's basically their new portable and console together.
Well, maybe they should team up and do like a big one that's an Xbox / Nintendo.
I would love to see that happen. There were so many rumors that the NX from Nintendo, what the Switch was in prototype. There were so many rumors that it was going to be the Nintendo Xbox.
See, that would be sweet.
I think that would be crazy if we saw these companies just come together and release something together. They're already working with crossplay. I think the Xbox Live achievements for Minecraft finally went live on the Switch, which is still just blows my mind. That you can
earn
gamer score on your Switch.
That's crazy to me. That's like, that's really fucking cool.
Yeah, should we keep the bad news going?
God,
let's keep the bad news going. Deep Silver announced that Shenmue 3 and Metro Exodus are both being bumped into 2019.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's not too bad.
No, but it's still sad for a lot of people because they were looking. I know Metro was like a big game this year for a lot of people.
Yeah. Especially, Xbox showed it off at E3 last year, so that was going to be one of their big advertised titles for the year, and now they don't have that. So hopefully their E3 showcase will have some new titles that people could get excited about.
Yeah, and hopefully things don't get delayed further.
I guess we'll see. Oh, God.
Ugh. They have a history of that shit, too, with, like, Hellraid and fucking at this point Dead Island 2.
Oh yeah. Lord.
Dead God. Island 2. Remember Dead that fucking water. Game? Yeah, exactly. I thought they brought a new developer onto it too, and then we haven't seen anything in a couple
years. It's been bounced back and forth by a ton of different people. Like
at this point,
I think even Crytek bought it at one point.
they're gonna Duke Nukem forever this one. If it ever does come out, it's not gonna live up to what people want.
And to be fair, I think they're remembering it too fondly anyway, because Dead Island 1, while it was a great fun game, it was a broken mess anyway.
Oh, yeah.
they weren't good games anyway. They were just fun.
Yeah, they were a blast to play, but they were not quality and well-made at all.
Yeah.
Although the voice acting in the first game was so bad, it was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Like the rapper dude, when you would just show up with the rapper dude and he's like, let's do it together. I loved it so much. And have you ever watched people jump in that game in Dead Island? Arms straight down, it's like river dance jumping. Oh, crazy. How about some good news? Here's some good news.
Is there any of that?
Yeah, a little bit. We got a little bit. The NES Classic is returning to stores June 29th. So if you've been looking for an NES Classic, they're coming back this summer. It is confirmed. It is happening. And that and the Super Nintendo Classic are going to be in production through the end of the year. So that gives people plenty of time to finally be able to pick one up. And hopefully scalpers don't get all of them again.
I was about to say, or for scalpers to grab them all and put them on eBay.
It's a scalping market. I don't know. The SNES Classic has been fairly easy to track down. Every time I go to Target or Walmart or Best Buy, they have them in stock. So hopefully the NES Classic will be the same and we'll see plenty of them out there.
Hopefully.
My sister was the one we were trying to find the SNES for. And we ended up paying $160 for one on eBay because it was the cheapest we could find.
How much?
$160.
Oh, damn.
So
that is bananas.
And that was after like months. Like I spent days on end into weeks into months calling every GameStop in the tri-state area every day.
Jeez.
And they must have gotten to know you pretty well.
They did. I'm pretty sure they hear this, you know, Paula Deen cosplaying as Minnie Mouse and was like, just fuck off.
They're not like, oh, it's you a prank
call again.
Yeah. That bitch is really determined to get an NES. Yeah, my sister actually just caved and bought one on eBay. But and I know she still wants one of the original NESs. And I'm just like, I don't even want to tell her they're coming back out because she's just going to send me on another wild goose chase for one and end up having to get it off eBay again.
Well, don't tell her and then just look for them. And if you get one, be like, hey, guess what?
Surprise.
Yeah, that's a better idea. Surprise.
Happy birthday.
Or Merry Christmas or something.
Happy New Year. Oh, something. Let's see. What other news?
Happy President's Day.
Yeah, Happy President's Day. Happy Arbor Day.
Good 9/11? Question mark.
Oh God.
You say that funny, but she actually did buy me trees and send them to me and say Happy Arbor Day.
Hopefully people miss what CJ said.
I ignored it. Do you see? I tried to talk over it.
I like dark humor. It's bad.
What other news? No Man's Sky has gotten a July 24th release date for Xbox One, and the game is finally adding actual multiplayer to the game, including PvP, dogfights, shared base building, races, and more. So it looks like we might finally get the No Man's Sky that we were supposed to get all that time ago, now on Xbox.
And with all of those promises, it will only actually have the PvP mode.
Maybe. Or maybe I'm the joking. Base building, but not the PvP.
Or maybe you can base build with somebody, but you won't be able to actually see them as they're building your base.
Yeah, you just randomly have parts of your base popping up.
Oh, it's a ghost. Oh, shit, it's a ghost. A ghost is putting up a wall.
Or it'll be PvP, but you only get building materials.
I'm being tentatively, yeah, interested in No Man's Sky. Like, I'm waiting for there to be disappointment because you know it's inevitable.
People have actually said it's gotten to be a much better game anyway.
Yeah, I've heard it's shaping up fairly well. I'm
playing it, but I'm just kind of like...
It only took, 2 years?
Yeah. I'll give it another shot. I played it when it first came out, and I thought it was boring, but I'll give it another go and see how it is now and see what all has been done and if it's worth playing or not.
Yeah, I'm interested in it.
You know what would have been amazing with No Man's Sky? Crossplay.
Yeah. Crossplay. I mean, at least through the PS4 and PC, since it wasn't out on Xbox yet.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe we'll end up seeing it come out for the Switch, and we'll get Xbox, Switch, and PC crossplay. That'd be fun.
Maybe.
That would be great if that happened. And Sony's just by themselves.
Come out on mobile.
That'd be amazing.
It'd be even funnier because it was supposed to be the exclusive game of the year.
Oh, yeah. And now it's a joke. Like, when a game comes out and doesn't meet expectations, they're like, oh, this is another No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. The last bit of news that I have is that one game was added to the Xbox backward compatibility lineup this week, and it was a big one with Fight Night Champion. I know a lot of people are excited about that one.
Are you being sarcastic or not?
No, I'm being serious. Like, a lot of people have been looking for a new boxing game, and now they at least have Fight Night Champion that they could play.
Okay, I wasn't sure, because like, your voice had that like sense of sarcasm, and your words were picked very carefully to sound sarcastic.
A lot of people are excited about this one. Ride to Hell. Oh, no. What the fuck was that game? Ride to Hell Redemption? Something like that? Awful 360 game.
Yeah, you're right. It was Retribution.
Retribution. That's what it was. Ride to Hell Retribution. Await the day that one becomes playable.
I doubt it'll ever happen because it's not playable in the sense of being playable anyway.
If Very true. Very, very true. But yeah, that's the news I got. Anything y'alls want to talk about?
Well, I'm excited about one thing that's happening.
What?
Vampire went gold, so it's like it's like fully releasing on June 5th. I'm so excited for that game. It looks sweet.
Yeah, I can't wait for that one.
Thanks.
It looks pretty sick.
Should be pretty dope, as the kids say. Is that what? Oh no, they say lit.
They say lit.
It's gonna be straight fire, yo.
It's gonna be lit, fam.
Gonna be lit.
I can just imagine how many people are hitting the unsubscribe button right now.
I'm hitting it 10 times for saying lit.
It'll be light, family.
I'm cringing.
What is up, my families?
Good, my dudes.
Anything else, or should we just dive into the reviews?
Let's go.
Yeah, let's get CJ out of here at a reasonable time.
Well, you're the one who wants to just do your shit and get out, so we'll start with you.
I was being serious, not sarcastic.
You dick. All right, we're just diving into the reviews. Let's get this going. First game to talk about is called Trailblazers, developed by Super Gonk, published by Rising Star Games. It released May 8th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $29.99. Get ready for high-speed thrills with an explosion of color in Trailblazers, the first-ever second-to-second cooperative arcade racer. Paint the track with dynamic racing lines, boost on your team's color, and blaze your way to victory. CJ, tell us about this one.
Well, there was one thing I blazed while playing this one, and it was my competition.
Uh-huh.
You didn't think I was going there. Okay, I was really excited for this game before it launched. I was like, I wanted to play this. It looked really cool. You know, it has a really fun color and art style. That's my favorite part of the game. It's the looks. The game looks beautiful and like very cartoony while still looking kind of realish. You know, it has that crazy vibe to it. It's colorful as hell. I mean, it's basically Splatoon mixed with Trackmania, except a little bit less crazy on the tracks. But still, very similar to that idea, though, where with Splatoon, you paint the, you know, paint the walls. In this game, you paint the track. And then when you're in your color of track, you get a boost in it. So if you're working in a team game, your teammate, if they're ahead of you, can start painting the track, and you get a limited amount of paint before you have to wait for it to recharge. But that gives you some space to kind of boost and try to catch up.
So it's kind of like drafting in races, where you'll be behind someone riding their color instead of riding their tailwind. You're just in the color, and you could zoom ahead of them, and then you paint for your teammates.
Yes, exactly. But that doesn't help you if the enemy has a bunch of paint all over the floor. Now, luckily, it doesn't slow you down, which I actually thought that was going to be the case before I played it. But it doesn't help you, because now they're just going to be getting ahead of you. And that leads me to my one of my big problems with the game is there doesn't seem to be any form of catch-up. Like, if you get knocked back early in the race, just restart. There's no way you're ever going to catch up. It's really hard to come from behind once you're knocked back. But even like late in the race, like if you're at third place and you only have one lap left to go, you may as well restart if you want first.
Wow.
Because you're not going to catch up. It's a game where you basically, the goal is to get ahead at the beginning, because at that point you're going to be able to stay ahead because of the boosting. And that's the whole way the game works. It's the boosting is the most important key. And if you get a good start, the rest of the race, you're going to be in first place and not have to worry about a single thing. And I like the concept of the game, but I feel like it, because of the way the boosting works, it actually subtracts from the game. Because it becomes less of a racing game and more of get ahead right away and then just drive, or stay behind them the entire time because there's no way you're ever going to catch up.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, that kind of bothered me and sadly made me enjoy a very beautiful game a little bit less. The other bonus I'll give to them that's really great is the hilarious dialogue they have in the game. While there are no voice actors, there's a nice little fun story thrown in there that's all text-based. And before each track in the career mode, you'll get a little like back and forth between a couple of characters. And so far, that stuff's pretty funny. Like, rarely do you laugh out loud at something written in text.
But
especially rarely do you laugh out loud in a racing game.
So yeah, that's a good point too. It's like in a racing game, but the dialogue's very unique and fun in it. I honestly feel like I enjoy the game more as like an overall look than the actual gameplay itself.
Mm.
I like what they did with the stuff outside of the gameplay, but the gameplay itself is not solid. And the other thing that really bothers me with the game is the excruciatingly annoying soundtrack.
How, like, is it annoying?
So, you know, they want to give you that fun vibe that's like crazy and goes along with the colors and stuff. And that's great. It would be great if it didn't feel like there was only like three songs.
Mm.
And they're on loops for like the entire race. So it's annoying as hell. Like, it starts out fun and great and you like the song. And then it's like, I hate the song. Never play it again. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. I've been playing this for a few hours now. This song is stuck in my head.
So it's sounding like a mix of highs and lows with this one.
Yes, it's like, it's not a bad game. It's just the gameplay itself isn't as great as I had hoped. It's unique. It's a fun idea. It could have been better executed.
What do you think they could do to fix it?
Implement some sort of form of catch-up. That'd be fine. Working both for the AI and for yourself. I don't want it to just be super easy for you, because the thing is, if you get ahead, like I said earlier, if you get ahead at the beginning, you're staying ahead and you're never going to see any competition.
Mm.
So it'd be fun if they introduced a little bit more catch up, or at least ability to catch up. And while there are gates that you can drive through that'll put a little bit of your color in front of you, it doesn't do enough to change anything when the entire track's covered in theirs already.
Yeah.
So there needs to be like a non-painted version of catch-up, so that you can at least have some competition and competitiveness.
Yeah, and a couple more music tracks, right?
Yeah, and a couple more music tracks wouldn't hurt, but at this point, I don't see that happening. I'm sure they spent a pretty penny on licensing for music, considering it has lyrics and stuff, which is generally rare for games nowadays. They normally just license somebody to make a few wacky beats or whatever. But instead, I feel like these are actually songs that they licensed. So maybe it was probably a bit more expensive for them. And I don't know if they could afford to do a few more with this game.
Eh, you never know. But $30 on this one, what's your official verdict?
I gotta give it like a medium try it.
Like, wouldn't that, like, just be try it then?
Yeah, but like slightly more less than normal try it, like just like on a scale of like medium. If we were talking about steaks, it'd be like a medium rare try it. It's like not quite at medium, but it's like not bad enough to just be like a rare try it.
Now I'm hungry.
You know what I mean? Especially at $30. At $30, it makes it a pricey grab too for an indie game.
Yeah. Well, you have another racing game to talk about, and that is called Horizon Chase Turbo, developed and published by Aquarius Game Studio, released May 15th on PS4 and Steam for $19.99. Horizon Chase Turbo is a racing game inspired by the great hits of the 80s and 90s like Outrun, Rush, and others. Each curve and each lap in Horizon Chase Turbo recreates classic arcade gameplay and offers you unbound speed limits of fun. Full throttle on and enjoy. CJ, what is this one?
Well, if you thought the last game was bad, thank God this one's nothing like it, because it's amazing.
Oh, I see what you did there. The old switcheroo.
Yeah, bait and switch, bitch. No, but this game is actually really, really good. I love it so much. Like, when you offered it to me, I was a little more hesitant on this one because I had already taken that other game and I wasn't sure how much I would really like this game or if I really wanted to take it. But man, am I glad I took it, because this game made my week. It was so much fun to play the entire time I played it.
So what do you do in it? Tell us about the game.
It's a racing game. So you drive. But it's very classic. It's like, you know how... It's weird because the turning feels different because it's a classic game. It's like a new game with the classic graphics while still looking beautiful and new. It's hard to explain how they did it, but it looks like a new game with old graphics, and it makes no sense. It's like I can't put into words what it looks like.
Helpful. And, very, very helpful for an audio podcast.
Well, maybe we should do a video podcast, Joe. But gameplay-wise, it controls just like a old-school game, too. Like, it doesn't seem as much like you turn as more as you go straight, but it turns with you? It's hard to explain because it's such a weird concept that I'm not that used to. While I played a few in the arcade, I didn't really like them, so it really surprises me how much I love this game because it's just so weird and different as a driving game. I will say the driving's excellent. Turning is like responsive as hell. It's amazing. I've never played a game in a racing game ever where I've held the stick and that's exactly how you're supposed to do it. Like, it's just perfect. It goes around the corner amazingly.
Which is good to hear. You don't have to fuck around. Controls aren't too touchy, I guess.
No, it's basically like if you see a left turn coming, just hold left and it does it.
That's good.
There's no like, you gotta tap it slightly. Okay, now go. It's like, just go. You'll make it.
You so just barely hold the ever gas and drive.
Yeah, you barely even have to touch the brakes at any points. So, like every once in a while, you get a really sharp one, but normally speaking, they don't really throw the like hairpins at you or anything in this game.
Yeah, this is sounding a lot like Outrun. Now I see why they're likening it to Outrun.
Yeah, if I knew what that game was, I would be agreeing right now, Joe. I am a child, Joe.
Have you never played a Sega Genesis collection before or something?
I played Sonic once.
They have Outrun Coast to Coast on the 360, or they did.
Yeah.
I think it was Coast to Coast, one of them.
I don't know. But
are there more than three music tracks?
You know, now that you mention it, I don't know, but it doesn't have any vocals, so it doesn't seem like it's repeating, so I'd assume so. Also, beautiful. They have so many tracks. So many different tracks. Like, there is a ridiculous number of tracks in this game because every single race you do in the career mode is a different track.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Wow.
Like, thank you. It's really great. They also have some insane little game modes in the game. Like, you know, you get your base career racing and that's that. But they also throw at you endurance races. Now, you know, endurance races, it doesn't mean much in video games. You can just sit there and race for, like, what, an hour or whatever. But they have a gold trophy for completing the one endurance race, which is the 109. And I believe that is 109 laps. And I have not done this, but I was looking at people's times that have, which is only one person, and it took them 8 hours.
What?
Wow.
It's an 8-hour endurance track. Now,
holy shit.
I don't know if they decided to pause or something, but
I'd imagine they had to. You got to take a break in there somewhere, if nothing else, to stand up and piss, unless you got like a pee bucket with you.
Exactly. No, 8 hours of racing, I would blow my brains out, but I want to do it.
I'm trying to think, because I did in NASCAR Heat 2, I did like the full race for the one of them of like 500 laps, the Indy 500. And I want to say even that was only like 3, maybe?
Yeah, I believe that's a 3-hour, because it's like that would be irrelevant or equated to a normal Indy 500, which is about 3 hours.
Yeah.
But yeah, eight hours.
Holy God. Fuck.
I know, like at that point you have to be like, I want to die. Like you have to set an entire day aside to do this.
Good Lord.
Which is incredible. And I'm happy that they put that in there.
What is the most time consuming achievement you guys have ever done? This is a fun subject. Might as well just go off course for a little bit here.
Well, I mean, technically speaking, I would assume it would be like Gen 10 in Titanfall, because I did that, and that took forever.
No, I mean like in one sitting.
In one sitting? That's a hard question, because I don't really know.
Kind of like my Indy 500 one that I did.
I mean, it's not exactly long, but it's challenging and it makes it long, which is that marathon achievement in Trials HD where you had to complete like 20 tracks without faulting in a tournament. Mm. And so it took me like 5 hours, or no, it took me like 3. But in reality, the tracks,
in total probably only took like 15 minutes.
Yeah. It's what about just, you, Cole?
The Flame and the Flood on Endless Mode, you had to go 40 days of in-game time without eating vegetables. And also another achievement was 40 days for not eating meat. Nice. And I was like, to just get to day 40 alone without even like fucking up was kind of a task on its own. But I ended up having a run where I was like on day 160 and the game crashed. And when I brought it back, it was gone because it's you know, it's a roguelike. So you start all over again.
Oh, no.
But I think I have, I did the vegetarian one, but it didn't pop because, or I think I have the vegetarian one, but not the one for only eating meat. I have one of them and not the other because the one was glitched and it didn't pop and it wasn't retroactive. So I have to do it again.
Oh, no. Man.
Yeah. I didn't know at the time that it was glitched. So.
Oh, that reminds me of like the Lego Worlds achievement, which was glitched, but not in the same way, but it was like the billion studs achievement, but you actually had to get the billion studs in one play. Like, you couldn't quit the game or it would stop counting, and you'd have to restart the billion.
I'm guessing and they fixed that eventually.
Yeah, they did, but there was a glitch way, but it still took, like, 8 hours of playing for both people to get the achievement, because you had to do it in multiplayer. And it's like, oh, that was a whole day.
I think besides the racing one, the longest one I ever did was the Bladder of Steel achievement in Rock Band 2, where you had to do every song in the set list, the endless set list mode, without pausing or failing.
See, that's what I was gonna like compare to this. This is like another version of that.
Yeah, that was a fun one to do.
Games are trying to give people urinary tract infections.
Like, at that point, you have to, like, be able to take it, like, second screen experience, okay, to try to hold your...
See, I was lucky in that I started fairly early in the day so that when my wife woke up before she had to go to work, I was, I don't know, like, 20, 30 songs in, and they were still fairly easy songs, and I figured, I'm going to wait, she's going to wake up, she's going to come out, I'm going to hand her the guitar, I'm going to say, play for 10 minutes, and then, or no, not 10 minutes, for, like, a minute or two, and then I just went to pee, and then I came back, and I kept going.
That makes life better.
So I cheated.
I hope there's a pause, because I have not played the endurance race to be able to tell, and oh my god, if there's not a pause,
because
you have to win in order to get the trophy. Like, you have to get gold, which means first place. So if there's no pause, you're fucked. The only thing I actually had to complain about with the game is honestly the fact that the collision it can be frustrating, and you start the race at the very back of the pack and there's 20 racers. So you have to work around a small, like, you know, the track's only like a few lanes wide, and you got to work around 20 fucking people. And if you bump into them, you slow down heavily and it says, grr, or like, well, my bad. It's basically like, grr. It's like, fuck. Now I have
grumble,
to
grumble.
Up. and you can, it's like the slowest people are actually pretty slow. So once you pass up first place, you then gotta avoid them, or you're gonna fucking bump into them and lose first place. It's like, god damn it, the bumping is annoying, but it's like a small price to pay for the rest of the beautiful, amazing game. And it was totally made to be that way. Like, it's not like that was not purposeful to have annoying collision, because they fucking put little like speech bubbles on the screen. Like, it was meant to be that way.
Oh man, so we kind of went off track there, but $20 on Horizon Chase Turbo, what do you think?
Well, obviously it's a deny it, Joe.
Oh, clearly.
No, buy that fucking game. I know this isn't a hugely PlayStation or PC oriented show, so it's not...
Well, from what I hear, people online were saying that the developers apparently said it will be hitting Xbox and Switch later this year, so if that is true, everyone else will have to keep their eyes out for it when it does happen.
Yeah, because if you don't buy it on launch, I'm going to come to your house and kill you.
Sounds good. On that note...
I'm joking. I won't do that. Please don't worry.
And that's how we lose Twitch affiliate.
That is how CJ never comes back on again. I wish people would give me bits. I don't think anyone's even watching. Did you?
I'm watching.
Yeah, I was the only person to have ever donated bits. Because I remember the episode. I came in for like a minute. I donated bits. You were like, oh, I didn't realize the sounds were still enabled. That's going to be in the video now.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah. CJ with the biddies.
Well, CJ, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final words before you... Yeah, true. Do you have any final words before you bounce on out of here?
Yeah, just that I'm glad I'm getting out now so I don't have to deal with sitting here in quietness and boredom for the next 40 minutes. Good luck. I mean,
you could chime in with other reviews, obviously.
Well, I don't know. You guys probably didn't play great games. I'm joking.
All right, get the hell on out of here because we got more shit to do.
All right, what if I just kept delaying your show, though?
Whatever. Next game to talk about is called Forgotten And. Next game to talk about is called Forgotten And, developed by Throughline Games, published by Square Enix, who also provided the code to us. We were asked to mention that, you know, we always only cover shit that's given to us, so I don't know why we have to specify, but they provided the code to us. They were generous enough to allow us to cover this game, so thank you, Square Enix. This one released May 15th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $14.99. Step into a hand-animated realm of wonder in which everyday objects take on a life of their own. Uncover the Forgotlings' mysteries and harness magical forces as you embark upon a quest to return home. Dark Mika covered this one in and wrote in her review, and this is what she's got to say. Forgotten Anne is a 2.5D puzzle platformer and a pretty easy and basic one at that. It's all about telling a story rather than trying to be difficult, which I'm thankful for since I suck at platformers. You play as Anne, a young girl living in the land of forgotten things. It's an interesting concept, and I had to say I really liked it. Anything you forgot disappears from the human world, which they call the ether, and appears in the forgotten world. These things, however, aren't as they were in the ether. Instead, they're alive. An old, forgotten, crusty, jerk-it song... What the fuck? Living in the forgotten world as a living being. Oh yeah, also their personality is based on what they are and what they're used for, so it would probably be obsessed with both feet and sex. So yeah, creepy bad things should be in it, but thankfully there's no forgotten sex toys or anything in it. Jesus, that would have been fucking terrible. So why did you mention that? Like,
I have questions.
I have questions about what is wrong with Dark Mika sometimes. Anyway, the plot centers around Anne trying to stop some of the individuals, Forgotlings, they're called, from committing terrorist attacks. Anne's mentor, another human who has forgotten, raised her as she was forgotten as a baby. He's building a way back to the ether, and some of the Forgotlings have decided that's a bad idea. They're taking it upon themselves to forcefully stop this bridge between worlds from being made. Anne's out to stop these rebels. The game is about choices, the player's agency when it comes to interactions with the various Forgotlings that inhabit the land, be they rebels or average citizens. The story has some twists that, honestly speaking, blindsided me. Also, it's bittersweet as fuckballs. Such a way with words sometimes. There's two endings to the game, and both of them will probably make you sad. That being said, if you want to make different choices in the game, there is a replay option after you beat the game. The replay lets you go back into any section of any chapter. I believe you have to play to the end of the game again. Not 100% sure on that, but I believe that's the case, as I've not been able to figure out how to exit the replay. The characters are all fun. They all have individual personalities, even the ones that are only shown for a short period of time. Most of the characters are rather endearing as well, even if they start off as twats, and there are some that start off as twats. There are only two characters I didn't like. They started off as twats, ended as twats. One is a dead twat. Either way, twats.
Spoiler alert!
So if you run into anyone twatty in the game, there's a 50% chance that they die. I hope Square Enix listens to this and they're like, why the fuck did we let them ever cover our games? What pulled me towards this game was its visual style. I'm a big fan of anime, as I'm sure everyone knows by now, and this looks very much like a Studio Ghibli film. I fucking love those movies, so I was totally ready to play this. It did not disappoint at all. It is beautiful. The musical scores in the game are amazing as well. Also has a few amusing miscellaneous achievements, one for sitting on every possible chair, another for trying on every dress, which is called Millennium Actress. I mentioned that one by its name because there's an anime movie named Millennium Actress, and I believe the achievement is a nod to that, and I love it. It's $20 on PlayStation, Xbox, and PCs. It is so fucking worth it. It's a medium-length game, maybe 10 to 20 hours, something like that, depending on if you're looking for the collectibles. It's really goddamn fun. The characters are amusing and interesting. The story is loopy, which is great. The story and visuals, both are very Ghibli-like. If you're not excited with just that last bit, there's something very fucking wrong with you. So, good stuff. Good twatty stuff. Hopefully the next game is less twatty, because the next one to talk about is called Boss 101, developed and published by Donnelly Time Foundation. It released May 18th on Xbox One for $14.99. Create your own bosses to battle in this arcade action adventure. Yes, there is a story as well as pure action modes for those who want to blast things. Explore worlds while you upgrade your tech and improve your base. Make new friends, adopt pets, and even fly a kite. Cole, tell us about this one.
This game left me surprised. I play a lot of shmups. I'm not particularly good at them, but I play a lot of them. This one, though, I was actually good at, and I was able to complete it, and I was even second on TA to complete this game. So, what is the game? Because that's what you're going to ask me.
Yes, I am.
Other than being a shmup, Boss 101 is a retro-inspired shoot 'em up, where, as opposed to just going in and blasting enemies, players have the ability to create the bosses that they're going to take on. The story revolves around a character named Max and his sentient jetpack named STEVE.
Or that Steve. That spells Steve.
So Steve and Max live on a planet that was invaded by alien robots and are at war trying to kick out the invaders. There are various warp portals that the resistance that Steve and Max are a part of have managed to gain access to, but each warp portal is protected by a boss. However, Steve and Max's crew, with the help of Professor Gopher, who speaks in code and randomly paraphrases Moby Dick quotes, have been able to gain access to the Make-A-Boss software that is used by the enemies, and can actually roll and re-roll the bosses that are guarding these warp gates until they get ones that are weaker or worth more money, depending on how you want to approach it. Each boss is made up of five different portions. There's an engine, a body, a head, an arm. I forget what the technical name for the other part was. But anyway, and there's a huge collection, so that when you're creating these bosses, you're never replaying the same one. There are literally over a million possibilities.
Holy shit.
For creating a boss. Over a million. You will never play the same boss twice.
That's pretty cool.
When you're in the Make a Boss screen, it does show you, you know, which head you're going against, which engine part you're going against, the different pieces. Each piece also has a value based on how difficult it is to take down, which results in a final bounty when you've created the boss. To create it, all you do is just click Make a Boss, and it does it randomly. So if you're looking for a specific head or something, you're going to have to click a few times and hope that it gets it. Different parts have of the bosses are immune to different types of weapons or have weaknesses to different types of weapons. So you don't just really want to hit the button, make a boss and then go in blindly. You want to sit and poke through your character and make sure you're set up to go against that kind of boss. There are different skins, and they call the game calls them hats, but some of them work as full-on skins for Max. But they actually have two different purposes. One is to make him look cool. You can make Max look like anything under the sun, from Thor to a Care Bear. Nice. Like there's some little bit of copyright infringement, you know, going on here. That's walking a very thin line.
Just close enough.
But yeah, it's really tight. So you choose your costume hat, but each costume also has a different set of abilities, meaning some of them will allow you to have infinite time so that you can take the boss out at your leisure, or some of them offer health boosts or immunity to lasers or things like that. So what it all boils down to is that you're not just looking for a costume that's going to look good, but you're going to want one that's going to be functional for the boss that you're going against. And the way that the game deals with this is that it lets you actually assign the costume, the hats that you're choosing. One can be, you can wear two. I don't know why, but you can wear two. And you actually assign one as your costume and then another one as your ability. So if you want to look like a Care Bear, but you want the ability of a Time Lord, the game's going to let you do that. And that's, I thought that was a really
unique approach. You're just wearing the Care Bear outfit over top of the other one, obviously.
Basically. it's a really neat approach, because a lot of games will give you all these options and then be like, well, whatever, it doesn't matter what it looks like, it's what it does. And you end up wearing a costume you hate and don't even want to look at.
No. But how's the shooting in the game?
The shooting is actually really good. The biggest issue is that some of the bosses are straight up bullet hells. Yeah. And they're pretty tough, but there are so many gun variations and abilities and stuff that you can unlock that even with some of the straight hardcore bullet hell bosses that were just pummeling out shots at you, you could just shoot the nuke gun and dissipate any of the bullets and just keep going like nothing had happened. Nice. Each level has a series of medals that you can unlock there for, you know, beating the boss using the nuke or beating the boss without using the nuke, only using the machine gun that you start off with. That's your basic one. There is a store you can actually go in and buy. I forget. I know there are like 275 hats.
That's a lot of hats.
And there are 40 different pieces for every body part that's available as well. So like I said, the combinations that you can create and replay over and over are just absolutely mind-blowing. Never going to have two runs the same. There are 31 levels.
God.
No. Sorry, I hadn't yelled at you in a while. I had to do it. There are 31 levels. Like you said, you can also have there's the kite flying mode. There are 4 mini games, and there are 2 endless modes. One has power-ups and one is like an Iron Man challenge and does not have power-ups. I do want to touch on the mini games because, like I said, there are 4. They're part of the achievements. You have to play them and get local top scores if you want the completion for the game. Mm-hmm. One of which is Breakout, which is fucking fantastic in and of itself, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, I love Breakout. I want to spend all day playing Breakout. So I asked the devs if there were ever any chance, like, it was a one-off joke of, hey, are you guys ever just going to release a standalone Breakout? Surprise! They are.
Oh, nice.
It's already on Steam, and it's coming to Xbox.
Nice.
It's the Zecmo Arcade Pack, and it's all of the mini games, including Tank Wars and everything from Boss 101, as full standalone games with multiplayer and everything.
That's cool as hell.
That is really cool. I wanted to get to the arcade port just so I could throw that in there before you started blowing at me again. It was so worth it.
Everything sounds amazing with this. Are there any negatives?
No.
All right, then. So, $15 on this. I was
surprised to find anything I didn't like about it. The biggest complaint I had was one thing, and that's that there's so much, like, the game's so self-aware, and sometimes it feels a little shoehorned. And you're just kind of like, I get it, sentient jetpack joke. Okay, let's go. But that's really the biggest complaint.
I have a negative with it. I dabbled with it a little bit, not nearly as much as you have. I think there's times where there's just too much story. Like, I found myself early in the game a lot of times just like, come on, let me shoot shit. Talking. Okay. You're going to teach me more. Oh my God. Just let me fucking shoot something.
It's worth it though, if you put up with the tutorial, because he gives you $250,000 to start with for doing it.
Indeed.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. That was worth my time.
So $15 on this one. What do you think?
This is an absolute buy it. Just the replayability alone makes it amazing. So, and then it's the pixel art's really good. Plays, I didn't have any complaints as far as actual gunplay or any of that. So I'm happy with it.
Sounds good. Next game is called AO International Tennis, developed and published by Big Ant Studios, released April 30th on Xbox One and PS4, May 8th on Steam for $49.99. AO International Tennis combines fully licensed photorealistic players with a decade's worth of historical shot data that enhances their AI, so they play just like their real-life counterparts, right down to shot selection at any given point of time in a match. AO International Tennis is the most advanced tennis game ever produced. First off, I can't dispute that. The game plays really, really well. You know, it has your standard modes that you would expect in a game. It has quick play modes. It has tournament modes. The AO obviously stands for Australian Open, so you could just jump right into the Australian Open, go through all the tournament brackets. You could set your match lengths, your how many sets you play, how many matches, everything. It's very in-depth with the creation. On top of that, there is a really, really in-depth character creation as well, to the point that they have a feature in the Steam demo of the game that allows you to import your own face into the game. And again, this is in the demo, so anyone can do this on Steam as long as you can run the game on Steam. You can import your face data, map it to the character, and upload it. So even on the console versions, you can download your face data and have yourself in the game. I saw a couple of people who've gone through all the steps and really went through the time to touch everything up, and it looked really, really good. This is a really solid looking game. There were a couple of times that I was playing, and part of my mind was like, is this really TV? It looked like I'm playing it, and I'm like, this looks very, very realistic. The character animations are really realistic. The only thing I think holding this back right now is the controls. It is a very odd game to control. Moving your character, if you just tap in a direction, it'll take like two steps, kind of like, I don't know. In most games, if you press the button, you move only as much as you hold it. But this one, it seems like they're trying to have a more fluid, natural motion to how you're moving in the game. And it sometimes makes you feel like your character's moving when you're not intending to move, which can be both a positive and a negative, because you could be out of position for a shot and the game will kind of move you in the right direction so you can hit the shot. But then there's other times where it feels kind of awkward. Just the character movement in the game is awkward. Taking shots is also a little bit of a hit and miss. You take shots by holding down the button, and you have to have you know, a little bar raises up and you have to stop it in the green to get a good shot. There's different shades of the color. If you hit it in the red, you're going to have a shitty shot. You might, you know, hit it out. You might do just a shitty shot in general. So you want to try getting in the green. The problem is at the same time, you have to try aiming, which is on the top half of the screen where your opponent is. And the gauge where you have to stop it on the right color is at the bottom where you are. And you can only kind of focus on one of the two at a time. So
wow.
Trying to get a shot lined up where you want it with the perfect power, it comes down to a lot of muscle memory of making sure that you know exactly when to let go of the button to hit the shot with the right power without looking at the power and hoping for the best. Other than that, the game is really solid. Lots of modes in it. A lot of stuff to do. The online play was really solid. I didn't have any gripes with that. $50 is a little high, but, you know, it's not like there's a ton of tennis games on the market right now, so I guess they can kind of set whatever price they want. You can get around the control hitches, I don't want to say that they're necessarily the control issues, because it's not like... it's not like the game is doing what they didn't intend it to do. It's just what they intended is awkward to learn. But overall, $50 on this one, I still give it a solid try. It's good to see a new tennis game on console. That's for damn sure.
Nice.
Next game is called Monster Slayers, developed by Nerd Duke Productions and Stage Clear Studios, published by Digirati, released May 15th on PS4, May 18th on Xbox One for $14.99. Monster Slayers is a roguelike deck-building RPG adventure with an innovative card-based battle system that lets you customize a deck to suit your playstyle. Create a hero to join the Monster Slayers Guild and choose your path through the perilous Northern Valley as you follow your quest to defeat the legendary Harbinger. I think that's how that word is.
Harbinger?
Well, it's H-A-R-B-I-N-G-E-R. There's only the one R. Harbinger. Bing or Google? The Har-Googler. And become a true Monster Slayer. Cole, tell us about this one. Cliff Notes version.
Sorry. This is basically, like you said, you want to create a character and send them into battle because they want to join the Monster Slayer Guild. It's got kind of like a cartoonish chibi art style. It's shockingly adorable for a battle game. You do use a card light system. I'm actually not really a fan of card games, and yet somehow I was really into this while I was playing it. I was just like, I can get down with this kind of card game. There are 8 character classes available. You can have a rogue, a ranger, a knight, a barbarian, a cleric, wizard, merchant, or you can be a motherfucking dragon.
Motherfucking dragon.
I was the motherfucking dragon. Actually, me I was too. The dragon for a couple, and then I was like, fuck this, the dragon sucks, and I went for the merchant, because the merchant gets to play with everybody's cards, regardless of what they are. And so I was just like, I want to play with all the toys.
I was having fun with the archer.
Yeah. Each class has its own perks and weaknesses. But like I said, the merchant turned out to be my favorite because it just let you get a taste of everybody all at once. You use the cards in battle. Basically, there's a map to start with, and you click which area you want to go to. It gives you a little warning of what kind of beast you're going to run into while you're there. And then you just... go. It will come up at the beginning of a level with a layout of a map, roughly, basically a grid with some squares marked off, and you can choose which one they designate a room, and you choose which room you're going to go into. Unlike most roguelikes, though, this game gives you a heads up of what's in the room that you're going into. You know what you're going to fight when you get there. If there's a centaur, it will say right on that square, motherfucking centaur.
and the level. So you kind of know how much.
And if they're higher than you, I'm going to kick your ass. You get a chance to avoid it.
You know how deep the shit is that you're about to get into.
Yeah. So it's good because you get to plan. It's not like, say, Binding of Isaac, where you walk into a room and you get wrecked because there's just shit you didn't know was going to be there.
And this one you get your shit wrecked because you knew what was there.
Yeah, and you still got ballsy and went in and died. it's probably by a synth orb, because those things are fucking awful. There are items that drop that you can collect and keep, and you do level up. I tend to use the term roguelike light for games like this, because you get experience and it like funnels into a pool that you keep over the course of multiple runs. So your characters do get better, they do get stronger, and they do get abilities and stuff that you can unlock and keep with you even after you die and lose fuck all of everything else that you've done. Which is nice. It's like baby's first roguelite in that regard. I think I used that for The Story Goes On as well.
But it's not just like, not to say this game is easy, though, because this is... Oh, my God, Cat. You have to fucking jump like that.
You will get wrecked, even with the best of abilities, because there's a lot of luck involved. When you start the game, three cards get drawn for you and from your deck, and you have to just live and die by those cards, and it's really just luck what you get, but it's skill in how you use what you've got. The cards can just be one of four different types. There are defense, there are attack, there are magic, and I lost the other one in my notes. Support. Attack, support, magic, and defense. So different enemies that you run into are going to be affected by the different types of cards in different ways. They're also going to have their own cards that can sometimes counteract whatever you throw down, or just take more damage out of you, or they might be able to defend themselves from what you have, and you're just out of luck sometimes, because that's literally all you've got is luck. Did it go poorly for you, Joe?
Is that many, many, many times has the game gone poorly for me. There have been many instances where I would die on like the first or second monster. And then there's some times where you could get up to like level 10 or 11 before you finally succumb to the evil monsters. And obviously the further you get through the game, the more perks you're going to unlock and the better your character is going to be. And the more of a chance you have at surviving, but the game is still just very dead set on making sure you die. Like, even the first character that you create in the game, they're like, name doesn't matter, don't get attached, because it's going to die.
Yeah. I think the names are one of the best parts, though, because they have some of the damnedest names.
Yeah, there's some great names in this game.
It's like Gut Boil and stuff like that. It's like, pick a random body part. Now pick a random weapon. That's their name.
Like, and you meat have no stabber set. And weird shit like that. The game is fun as Let's kill fuck, though. I've been seriously addicted to it.
I was pleasantly surprised, because, again, like I said, I don't really care a whole lot for cards. As soon as there's cards involved, I'm like, peace. You know, I have feelings about cards. But, I have feelings about card games, but I really did enjoy this. And it was fun to see if I could, you know, when I'd have a bad draw and there were just cards that weren't useful at all, is still trying to make them work out in a way that was in my favor.
Mm-hmm. So
that didn't happen for you.
$15 on this one. What do you think?
I give it a buy it. I definitely give it a buy it.
I agree. I love their previous game, Vertical Drop Heroes. I was excited to see what Nerd Duke had with this one, and I was pleasantly surprised. I don't think I'm going to be able to get a completion on this one like I did Vertical Drop, but I'm going to play the fuck out of it, because it is really, really fun.
I intend to make a conscious effort.
All right, next game to talk about is called The Council Episode 2 Hide and Seek, developed by Big Bad Wolf, published by Focus Home Interactive, released May 15th on Xbox, PS4, Steam for $6.99, and obviously requires Episode 1. Continue the story of Louis Durocher as he deals with the dramatic results of his actions in Episode 1. He must continue his investigation into the disappearance of his mother, Sarah, while dealing with the newly arrived Spanish head of state, the finally revealed Lord Mortimer, and the quickly forming factions on the island. Another one from Dark Mika, so let's dive into this one. The Council 2 is... the same as the Council Episode 1, which I've also reviewed on here. So, yeah, you're still playing as Louis de Richer, still looking for your mom. All the choices in the first episode impact the second one heavily. For me, at the very start of Episode 2, someone died and I was blamed. So, yeah, lovely. Had to convince... That's loud. Had to convince everyone I wasn't the murderer, and then I went about trying to find my mom again. Now, because everything is based on your choices, maybe that person doesn't die in yours, and maybe someone else does, but maybe no one does. I've not had the time to play through it a dozen times to find out, however, I believe that is the case. Unlike the first game, where you more or less just interacted with others rather than actively looking for your mom in most of it, this one more heavily focuses on trying to figure out your mom's puzzles, mom with a U in every single one, mom's puzzles and trying to find her. You interact with people significantly less in this one, so there's less conversation parts. Instead, they're replaced with the puzzles. By God, and that's all the fucking holy on the planet, her goddamn puzzles just, goddamn it, dude, so fucking hard. The previous puzzles were mostly fairly easy ones, moderately difficult for a few, but this one, things get ramped up to, like, extra hard from the get-go. Word-to-mouth syncing doesn't seem to be quite right in this episode, but right before I started writing, there was an update to the game. My guess is it fixed that, as it was just over a gig in size. Beyond that, everything is just as good-looking. The game is beautiful and slightly off-looking, just like the first one, and I love it. Now, yes, this is short, but I can't really tell you anything about the story, as I'm pretty sure it changes based on your choices in the first game. I think that because of how the episode 2 started for me, because the start of it was based on choices I made. Many of you won't start in the same situation, so the story might end up being completely different. Visually, it's just as great as the first episode, so I really don't have much to say other than, hey, go check out the review for the first episode. So, yeah. It's on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $7. Totally worth it. However, I suggest either buying the full collection for $30 or buying the first episode to try the season pass if you want, which would total $32. Both options are cheaper than the $35 you'd spend buying each episode individually. If the games keep the quality, which this episode has shown they definitely are, this is totally worth $30. I thought that with the first episode, I still agree with that statement. My only complaint is they seriously could have made the puzzles in this one a bit easier. Fucking hell.
Wow.
So, puzzles. Puzzles are not her strong suit, I guess.
Puzzles are hard.
Oh, man. Next game to talk about is called Grim Legends 3 The Dark City, developed and published by Artifacts Mundi, released May 11th on Xbox One and PS4 for $14.99. Sylvia and her master Solomon embark on an adventure that will lead them into the city of Lichtenheim, where they will face a thief whose identity will come as no less a shock than the actual disappearance of the Incarcery Stone, a powerful artifact that binds Koshmar, a horrifying creature from another world. Cole... Who the fuck is Koshmar?
You're doing an incredible job of pronouncing this shit. I'm proud of you.
Am I? Yay!
Yeah.
So, I didn't even play the game, and I'm just fucking nailing
things. I can't tell you who Koshmar is without giving away major spoilers to the game. So I can't.
Okay, then what is Koshmar?
Koshmar is basically a demonic entity, if you will.
Nice.
There's this Grim Legends takes a pretty sharp turn from the previous two. It's based on folklore like the other two are, but Grim Legends deviates from the rest of the Artifacts Mundi games in that even though it's, you know, Grim Legends 1, 2, and 3, the story isn't cohesive. It's more like an anthology. So the folklore here gives us a story surrounding Sylvia and a group of monster hunters called the Order, as opposed to, say, the last one, where we had different characters going through different experiences without trying to give away any of that story as well.
Yeah.
But so we have Sylvia and she's gone through this tragic event. She doesn't have her memory. Everything about her life before a year ago is just kind of a blur. But she remembers that, you know, Solomon takes care of her and another member of the Order by the name of Gabriel has been excommunicated from the group, and she's aware of this, even though she's not aware of the situation surrounding why. And it comes out that he has in the past tried to use one of those stones in order to revive somebody that has passed. And they think he may be trying to do that again. When you use this kind of power, it has the potential to allow the Koshmar, which are demons, to enter the human realm and basically take over things. So your goal is, as Sylvia, to prevent that Koshmar from wreaking havoc and to send it back to the depths from which it came.
Story sounds cool. How's the gameplay?
The gameplay is basically your classic Artifacts Mundi. They have a formula and they stick to it and it works. There are some minor differences. It is the hidden object puzzles, but it is not the kind of hops that we saw in earlier games where you're giving a scene with a list and you have to find X, Y, or Z. It does more of the hops, whereas there are different pieces listed out, and like you have the little graphic with the picture of the piece, and you have to find that piece instead of just having names of random items, and then you just one of those items is one you need. You're trying to piece together those items instead. Mostly fine, but there is one puzzle where I legit got stuck, and I have never struggled so badly on an Artifacts Mundi game. This added a total of 30 extra minutes to my playtime.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't do it myself. I had my husband help. He couldn't find it. We eventually had to go to YouTube because of the pieces and that's kind of a big deal if you know that I pride myself on completing these games without guides. I love them. But it was so, because the piece that I needed in the picture below that you were supposed to be trying to match to, it was a round metal piece with two little hoops coming off of it. And so it was laid flat so you could see that it was supposed to be a round metal piece. In the image that you were trying to find this in, the piece was actually turned sideways and vertical. So it didn't look anything like the piece at the bottom. And to me, what I was looking at was just a metal piece stuck up in the air. And it was supposed to be this, you know, hoop. And I'm like, what? How is that even?
Artifacts stumped you finally, huh?
They finally, and I have one request for future Artifacts Mundi games. Please make sure that the pictures at the bottom match what you're looking for in the picture above. I've had to, like, when they've done the list before, I've had to go to Google and type in something because it was just called a different name than what I was used to and couldn't find it. That's fine. But when the picture is completely one orientation and the item is a whole different orientation, that shit's not okay.
Yeah, but it's funny to me, and that's all that matters.
It's not funny.
My amusement matters.
It's not funny. Otherwise, I had a blast. They're motorcycles.
This is just nothing but tech issues and sound issues today, huh?
That kind of day, man. It's that kind of day. Otherwise, there's no real problems with the game. The last one that we did, I can't even remember the name at this point. There's been so many. there was an obvious improvement, though, with like the facial animations. Mm-hmm. This one lost that. We don't have that kind of improved quality with Grim Legends 3.
I'm guessing it's just how they were released on Steam originally, where this is probably an older title than the last one we covered.
That's my best guess, because this one, like, you can tell there are moments where Solomon will be a static image, and then it gets weirdly animated, And then it goes to the flat being a static image again, and it's a little jarring. The rest of it is fine, though. It's a wonderful story, and I did enjoy it.
Cool. So minor gripes aside, $15, your verdict.
It's a buy it. It's still so good. Like, Artifex Mundi are the masters at what they do.
They really are.
Yeah.
Next game is called Lily's Epic Quest for Lost Gems, developed and published by StudioCraft, released May 16th on Xbox One for $6.99. Almost a lifetime ago, Lily's grandfather was a famous archaeologist. Since he was a young boy, he was digging for hidden gems around the world. Lily enters her grandfather's footsteps as a young archaeologist. Her epic quest for the ultimate treasure, fame, and glory begins in a small town below the garden of their own house. This is an interesting take on a match three puzzlers with a lot of exploration mixed in with it. You start at the top of the screen, and your goal, depending on the level, is to either get down a certain amount, unlock a certain amount of spaces, or to find treasures. And the way that is done is the ground is made up of different colored gems. When you match three together by sliding them left or right, up or down, they disappear. The other pieces don't fall. Nothing else moves around. They just disappear, and you're able to go down, explore, move around. The more pieces that you link together, you have the opportunity to unlock different power-ups, like, you know, an explosion that'll take out a 3x3 square, or one that'll take out a line of five, stuff like that. And your goal is to just accomplish whatever the task for that stage is. Obviously, the game gets tougher as it goes on. Cole, I know you played this as well. What did you think of it?
I did. I really struggled with the changes to the match three formula.
Like, you expect them to fall, and it's such a weird change. I just
wanted them to drop. And when I felt like I couldn't make the moves that I really wanted to clear out large chunks of it. And it was such a surprise that it does that, because it is such a large play field. Every play field in this game is big.
Massive.
But you can only take out little tiny pieces of it, and you just don't get to go anywhere else. And there's not enough moves to really fully explore it. Even when you're picking up the extra moves from matching the pieces that sparkle, there was still just not enough to actually get to go around and look for anything cool.
I mean, it depends on, because everything is obviously going to be randomly generated. One stage, if you replay it, is going to look different than the first time you played it. Or if you fail and you replay it, it's going to look different. So if you're lucky enough to get a bunch of sparkly pieces next to each other and blow them up, or match them and make them disappear to drop these extra turn orbs, It's possible. Like, I've beaten some stages with 20 moves left. So it's definitely possible, but more often than not, you're going to be scraping by the skin of your teeth.
Yeah. I just got frustrated when I wanted to go and look. And then it'd be like, oh, never mind, you ran out of moves. And I'm like, fuck. Or if you do get to go exploring, you have enough moves to actually get to do something, and then you run into, rock or something, and you don't have the high enough pickaxe, or the dark crystals, and you don't have the proper pickaxe. You have to come back and do it again later. And then you have to hope that when you come back and do it again later, you get enough moves to actually go through it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just kind of, it was just quirky, and it kind of zapped it. Like, again, when you play another match three and the orbs fall, it keeps the momentum of the game going. It gives you a reason to go look for the next move.
Yeah, I can understand why they don't fall in this game. And technically, if you want, you can use one of your moves to take a piece and drop it down, as long as you don't have any of your scaffolding in the way. The other weird thing with this game is the controls are kind of odd. There's a cursor that you move around so that you can move the pieces, and then you also have to move your character using the right analog stick. So you have to make sure to manage the left one to get rid of the pieces, and the right one to move around. And you have to make sure you're on the ball with moving around, because if you get these extra turn orbs, or if you get a power-up, if you don't get them quick enough, they disappear and they're gone.
Right. And there were a lot of times where I would make a power up or something and forget that the world wouldn't shift. And so I couldn't get to it after I had made it. And I was like, well, that was worthless.
Yeah.
And you just have to sit and watch them fade away or use three more moves to open up a path to it.
Mm-hmm. And then it still disappears by the time you walk over to it. It
disappears the moment you hit it. Yeah. It was just incredibly infuriating.
Yeah. That said, the game is cute as hell. I like that it's something, it tries something different with Match 3 Puzzlers. It puts a different spin on it. It's like Match 3 mixed with Dig Dug. And I really enjoyed my time with it. For $7, I give it a fairly recommended try. I really enjoyed it, and it's cheap enough that if you're a fan of Match 3 Puzzlers, it's worth checking out to see if it tickles your fancy the way it tickled mine.
I can agree with that.
Cool. We got one final game to talk about tonight, and we're actually revisiting a game. This one called Corgan, developed and published by Codestalkers, released April 27th on Xbox One as a free-to-play prologue with a Chapter 1 DLC available for $19.99. When we first covered this one, we gave the prologue a try it, or technically, well, yeah, try it because it's free-to-play, mm-hmm. So fucking why wouldn't you? We gave Chapter 1 an honest deny. It was just too much for what was there, and we had too many issues with the game. The game has had significant patches since it first launched, and I am going to say it's like an entire brand new game. The levels are the same, what you do is the same, but the mechanics of the game have changed so much to make this a significantly more enjoyable experience than it first was. I'm keeping all of that. Yeah, I mentioned in the review of the original game that I had an issue with one of the achievements, and I was advised to just start over, which I started a new character and I played for like 5-10 minutes. And I was like, I can't do this again. It takes too long to progress through. It took me like 4 hours to hit level 12 the first time around. Second time around, with the updated mechanics, the way your characters do a lot more damage, they take a lot less damage, there's more potions in the game, you're able to hold down the attack button to keep attacking instead of just pressing over and over. I went from level 1 to level 15 in about an hour, and I breezed through the game. Some of the issues from the game are still there. Like, a lot of the quests are just based on repetition of run all around the map, activating things over and over, which can get tiresome after a while. But the actual core mechanics of the game are so fucking improved that I'm impressed on a whole new level of how much work was done to improve the game.
The health potions are no longer useless, which is my biggest relief, because A, you can afford them. B, they're actually there to buy.
Yeah.
Like, you can get to the store and you can buy 5 for what you used to get for 1 for.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually, they won't heal you all the way, but it's
enough. They help.
They help. Make a dent to get you through. And because you have a couple extras, if you have to use 2, you're not up Schitt's Creek without a paddle.
Yeah.
And it was so nice to actually stop seeing the "you died" scene.
Yeah, I definitely don't die nearly as much as I used to. And when I do, I'm just like, I fucked up. I
probably pushed it.
Yeah, which, you still do in the game. You're still going to die every now and then. It's going to happen. Luckily, when you level up, your characters get all their health back. So, and you level up quickly enough in this game that it's not like I have to kill 400 enemies and I might level up. Level up regularly, and the game progresses a lot quicker, a lot smoother. This is a much, much, much improved game, and all the credit in the world to Codestalkers for not giving up on this and actually working to make it a better, more complete, more enjoyable experience.
It's definitely good to see developers that listen to the feedback and don't just put up and go, "No, that was the game I want to deal with it."
It's my vision. It is my artistic vision. Like, literally, nearly every complaint I had about the first game, I felt was addressed. And I feel like I told you, hey, you got to give Corgan another shot. I want to talk about it on the show again. It's a lot different. And I had a feeling that you saw me say that and you're like, yeah, fucking whatever, man.
No, but it really was a big difference. And when I had played before, I was just constantly dying. And I felt like I wasn't making any progress, getting anywhere, doing anything. And then I played it again. And I'm like, no, I'm actually getting to and taking out bosses. And I couldn't do that before. Because I was just dying too goddamn much. And it was just constantly going back to the beginning of the level and not getting anywhere. And this time I was able to actually play through. And I was like, oh, now I understand. It's not a bad game. It just needed some work. And that's just the nature of it. Sometimes they need a little polish.
Yeah. Like I said, some of those issues are still there. A lot of the quests are going to be based on just running around the map and repeating stuff. The DLC, the chapter one DLC, is still priced at $20. I think it should be like $10 a chapter, my personal thought, but you know, I'm not the one who created the game, so I don't know how much time and effort went into it. I don't know how many chapters are planned for it. $20 does seem a bit steep, but there is a lot of content in chapter one. I've gone through a bunch of different areas. There's an actual town with actual vendors that you can buy shit from. You can actually afford to buy shit in the game. We did not get to try the online since it's been updated. I would like to try doing that and maybe give another update eventually.
Yep.
But overall, the game, from going from a try it for the free to play, like download and play the prologue, definitely just do it because it is a lot better. It is a lot more fun. $20 on the DLC goes from a deny it up to a try it. If you enjoyed the prologue, if you enjoyed the prologue, you had fun with it and you want more game there, there's significantly more game in chapter one. So if you're okay with the price, I think it's worth picking up.
Yep. I agree.
So yeah, massive props to Codestalkers. I am definitely looking forward to seeing what other updates are there, and I'm looking forward to chapter two as well.
Same.
Good stuff. So yeah, that is this episode of the show. Thanks again to CJ for dropping by for a little bit and chatting with us.
I have my windows closed.
Final words for this episode, fuck those bikers. Seriously, every fucking episode.
Yeah.
And it's still going. It's still
going to be a long summer.
It's still going. It's still, fuck them. Fuck them hard.